the Ghosts in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have Kale Epperson and Daniel Fogel on the show today. They are part of the Paranormal Investigations of Oklahoma. I've had Kale on the show before, and I know that their paranormal team is still one of the most diverse teams I have come across. We'll get right into my conversation with Kale and Daniel right after these brief messages.
You awaken in a cold sweat. Your heart races and your breath quickens. It's 3 a.m. and you're not alone. Something lurks in the corner of the room, and it's darker than the night.
You're deep in the woods, enjoying a family camping trip. Marshmallows roast and laughs are shared until something screams from behind the ridge. It's neither human nor animal, but something in between. You can't see it, but it sees you.
You're driving down a dark, lonely road, singing along to your favorite song, when something dressed in white crosses your path. You swerve to an immediate stop and check your rearview mirror, but nothing's there.
The people are real, and the stories are legend.
The problem is that legends are often riddled in myth.
We uncover the truth. Tune in to Paratruth Radio every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, anywhere podcasts are found.
Well, today I'm excited to have Kale Epperson and Daniel Fogel from the Paranormal Investigations of Oklahoma on the show tonight. How you doing, guys?
Oh, doing great.
Doing good.
Well, you know, Kale, it's been, I was looking back and it was May of last year, 2020, that you were on the show, that I actually did a three-part series. And welcome back.
Appreciate it. Glad to be back. This is a good show.
Before we get into, I know you have a book to release here shortly with Tammy Ross, but I do want to find out what's been happening over the past year and a year and a half, other than COVID.
Yeah, we've been busy with investigations, traveling here, there, and everywhere, and got some exciting cases. And I think we had one exorcism this year. We don't get a lot of exorcisms, but we happened to get one. It happened to be a paranormal investigator that went to a haunt in Texas and something got attached to her, and we ended up having to do a exorcism on her. It was a pretty intense deal for her.
Your team did the exorcism, or do you bring somebody in?
Our team, we have two demonologists on our team, Reverend Harlan Bell and myself. We're usually the ones that deal with the demonic cases. We're the ones that usually handle that. Yeah, it was definitely an intense exorcism. It didn't take too long to get rid of the demon. It was basically what I consider a low-level demon, but it was enough to give her life havoc, though.
Yeah, because I know a lot of pastors, you know, including my sister. She's a pastor, and I know she didn't do any of that. And I've experienced that twice myself in over the past 40 some years, you know, but I didn't do the exorcism. I had brought other, you know, outside clergy in to do that. Yeah. That's we'll be getting into that here shortly too, on that side of paranormal investigation, you know.
Yes.
Demonic side.
The nasty side as well.
Right. Yeah. I know before when you were on the show, I had mentioned you were probably the most diversified team then. You know, with the members you had on the team, you know, I knew you had a Buddhist and your preacher and psychic and, you know, atheist, you know, so I know you were so diversified. It kind of blew me away. I didn't mean to discredit some of the other investigators I've had on the show, you know, when I say that, but, you know, I do mean that. I mean, you guys are highly diversified. I mean, are you still that way, or how much has the team changed, if any?
Well, it's kind of changed a bit. I would say probably about last year, we had a team split off. We had some team members that it was time for them to move on and start their own team. And some of the members went with them. And I got a lot of new members now that are learning and being trained. They're not being trained in demonology, but learning paranormal investigations and research. So right now, for like ministers, it would be myself and Harlan Bell, And of course, if we need help on a case, we got great paranormal unity with other teams that have ministers. I can just call them up when needed, and they can join us and help us if we need it.
So how many people are on your team?
We got about 11 or 12.
And what is Daniel's role in this?
Now, Daniel's our case manager. He's the one that goes out and finds the locations, and he books the locations, or the people will contact him directly to set up a case. So if it's a residential or business, he's the one that schedules all that and gets us prepared for it.
So Daniel, how do you go about doing that? I mean, do you put ads out, or I mean, does people come to you, contact you?
A lot of times what will happen is people will get with us, they'll get a hold of us, message us through Facebook. So if it comes down to like residential or houses, they'll message us and say, hey, here's some of the claims that are going on. Do you guys care to come out and take a look, see what you guys can find? We're interested in that. The other way I go about doing it is there'll be like notoriously supposedly haunted places, you know, museums, public places, historical places, stuff like that. And I will get a hold of them directly as well just to see, hey, can we come out and investigate? And then they'll either, you know, it'll be a yes or a no. And then we'll kind of get it set up and go from there.
Is it mainly residential or is it business?
Right now we've been doing mostly like businesses. We'll get residential every once in a while. Those have kind of slowed down with, you know, COVID and everything going on. So we haven't had a whole lot of people call to investigate houses and stuff, but yeah, we'll do restaurants, museums, historical buildings, all kinds of things. That's what we've got going right now.
We had the winery. That was cool, where we made contact with John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah.
Or at least a spirit claiming to be John Wilkes Booth.
That's true.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you go out on the investigations with them, Daniel, or do you just book the investigations?
I do. So I'll get everything booked and I'll tell the team, hey, this is what we're doing. This is when we're going. And I'm right there in the middle of everybody investigating, right there along with everybody. So I'm one of, as Kale was saying, they had the team, part of the team kind of broke off and went and did their own thing. And I'm one of the more tenured members still left with the team. So I'm here kind of helping train, you know, a lot of these new guys that have come in and stuff. So
yeah, he's got mixed, kind of a mixed role besides a case manager. He's like our lead investigator as well.
I was going to get to that. You know, you have probably more than just, you were just more than one hat. You know, I've had Jerry Beavers on before, on twice on the show, and I know she was one of your past members, Tambry Ross, and yourself. It's a very professional team. I've been following you on Facebook. I really like your paranormal investigations of Oklahoma, reaching beyond the borders into the unknown. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I always enjoyed that saying. It's stepping into the beyond, going into the unknown. When that phrase came to me, it's like we are dealing with something we really don't know what we're dealing with, and We're just stretching out there, trying to find evidence or find the truth behind it all. I always enjoyed that saying. I think it fits the personality of the team very well.
Now, do you still stay like in a certain area? I mean, how many miles out do you go?
I think this year we traveled quite a bit. We've been down to Texas a couple of times.
Up to Kansas.
To Kansas. We traveled quite a bit. And of course, trying to find new places in Oklahoma, like Broken Bow. That was 3-4 hour drive for us. That was a good investigation. It was definitely worth the drive.
Yep.
I want to get into that one. I mean, Broken Bow. That sounds to me like an Indian burial ground.
Broken Bow is actually a big Bigfoot area, Sasquatch area. We were excited when we drove down there. We were looking for the Bigfoot signs, the Bigfoot silhouettes, and it didn't take long. The closer you get to Broken Bow, you find the Bigfoot stuff. We got excited knowing that we're in Bigfoot country.
So did you see any Bigfoot or little Bigfoot?
We really didn't get a chance to actually go Bigfoot hunting because we were busy with our ghost case. But we did go to, what's it called, Hokietown?
Hokietown, yeah.
Hokietown. I recommend anyone to go to Hokietown. If people listening, they don't know what Hokietown is, the story of Bigfoot came from a game ranger?
Yep.
A game ranger down there. He wrote several books about his Bigfoot experiences down there. And of course, a lot of Native Americans in the area speak of Bigfoot being in that area. And the little town, it's small, but there's Bigfoot stuff everywhere. Statues, you can buy merchandise about Bigfoot. We really had a blast.
After,
we investigated Saturday into Saturday night and got a little sleep. And before we traveled back, we definitely had to make a stop at Hokie Town. So if you're a Bigfoot person, I recommend going to Broken Bow, Oklahoma.
Okay, Broken Bow, is that an asylum?
So it's referred to as Broken Bow Asylum. They refer to it as that. They've set it up as like a Halloween attraction now. So that's just the name that they gave for it. But basically what it was at one point in time, it was like a nursing home is what was the primary use for it. They did at one point in time have one specific area, one specific room where they did incarcerate, I believe, up to 10 people at a time in this room. And it wasn't necessarily because they were insane or crazy. It's they locked them up for all sorts of reasons, depression, you know, cheating on your spouse, all kinds of things. If you were just sick, they would lock you up in there. So they refer to it as an asylum based off that, too. But then it transitioned into that nursing home, which it was for many years. And then there's another wing that was used as like a almost like a halfway house for kids, teens that got kicked out of school and stuff like that. There's like a whole wing of the building that they use that for.
You know, whenever you mention asylum, you know, I'm thinking of somebody passed away there.
Right.
Multiple deaths.
Now, one of the what I call stories or claims, we were told that it used to be a trauma center and they had nurses there, and the nurses and doctors got scared from the hauntings there, that they literally like up and left everything there. The computers, IV bags, everything was left behind. Now, currently this location, they use it as a scare ground, like for Halloween, where people dress up and scare people. But a lot of the original beds and stuff are still in the location. And apparently lots happened there. I guess they had I want to call it the boys' home. Part of the building, they had a suicide there. Mm-hmm. No, we weren't told the name of the juvenile that committed suicide. All of it was due to privacy. The owner wouldn't let us know, which was fine. We did. We were able to find out the name. But of course, naturally, we're not going to repeat the name due to privacy reasons. But we actually made contact with him. The investigation like started off like crazy right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite investigations so far of the year that we've had. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon here local time when we got there, and just doing a walkthrough. I mean, it was just hopping off the hook, active. Like we were doing our walkthrough and we could hear bangs and other noises coming from all other different kinds of rooms that nobody should have been in. So it was an awesome place.
I think the greatest part that I enjoyed, we just had all the equipment set up. And we were out there with the pit crew from Oklahoma, and they're from Lawton, Oklahoma. And we like to do paranormal unity cases where we work with other teams. And they had this system up. I think it's called the Halo system. It's a type of spirit box. And like right when we were getting started, I could feel someone grab my arm, and it felt like a little old lady grabbing my arm, and she was squeezing it and holding me tight. And we could sense that she felt terrified and scared. And we pulled out the Halo and we started playing it. You could hear her voice coming off the Halo, and the responses we were getting, she was scared, and she was scared of somebody in the building. And we got this recorded live off our live feed, where she's like pulling me forwards and backwards, and she was just absolutely terrified. But the responses out of there, we got a lot of crazy responses. I think it got weird towards the end. We ran into a spirit, what I like to consider a damn soul. And most people don't realize what a damn soul is. A damn soul is a spirit of a human who was so evil in life, he can't cross over to the other side. He's basically bound to go to hell. And of course, with damn souls, they have the same abilities as demonic beings. They can scratch you, push you, and damn souls have what I consider connections with demonic forces. So they're basically kind of doing their bidding for demons. And this particular damn soul, it started harassing Daniel during the investigation. And at first, we thought it was kind of like fun and games. It was just kind of picking on him, making fun of him a little bit. And, you know, we were kind of getting a chuckle out of it. But towards the end, it got personal. Yeah. It started bringing up personal information out of Daniel's life that no one knew about.
Yeah.
And he walked out. he walked out because it got so personal. And this thing was the voices coming over the spirit box. It was just flat out evil. And like I said, it's not a demon. There's no demons there. But we were kind of warned coming in that there is a very angry spirit there. And he's very hateful to the people that come in there. And we discovered real quickly what we were dealing with was a damned soul. It was just somebody who was so evil in life. And I ran into damned souls at asylums before.
Mm-hmm.
The last one I ever ran into was at Griffin Memorial Hospital in Norman, Oklahoma. And that particular damned soul was a serial rapist and a murderer. And during that investigation, someone got attacked. And we even got like a creepy, like perverted EVP out of it as he attacked her. And he just said something rude, crude, and socially unacceptable. It was crazy. Damn souls are very rare to run into, but every now and then you might run into one. And it follows to the hotel.
Yeah. So it was so crazy. It caught me off guard. That's the first ever investigation I've ever just completely walked out of like that. And as Kel was saying, once we actually got back to the hotel, like we didn't have the TV on. We didn't have anything on. We were kind of sitting there. He's over here, you know, doing his thing and I'm doing my thing. And all of a sudden, the alarm on the clock radio in the hotel. It kicks on and I kind of look at him and I'm like, what? Like there, the alarm was not set upon going to check the clock radio in the hotel. The alarm wasn't set.
Yeah. It wasn't turned on. Wait, I cleansed the room.
I was just going to say that. Do you think that the spirit can follow you there?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I normally don't have to worry about ghosts too much following you back, but if you're dealing with anything demonic or like a damn soul, they can follow you home. It's very rare for ghosts to follow you home. Anything demonic, anything evil, a damn soul is a good example. They can follow you. And it followed us back to the hotel. And I think the pit crew even told us that their psychic medium ended up getting a weird phone call with a weird voice message.
And all the voice message said was the word, please. That was it. And according to the owner of pit crew, she called them and left them this whole long, you know, voice message saying, hey, this is what's going on in their hotel room, you know, just giving you a heads up, be on your toes because we may get some activity as well. Well, he got that voice message, but it didn't even show up as like a missed call. He just got the notification for the voicemail and all the voicemail said was, please.
That had to scare the hell out of you. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I never called them damn souls when I was investigating. I had like bad spirits, you know, good spirits. And
yeah.
I like that terminology for that, you know, damn soul, you know, because, you know, it does separate, you know, that spirit that's not demonic, because you'll know demonic when you know that.
And people get, I tried to explain to people, you know, there are angry spirits, angry ghosts. Well, a damn soul is someone that is done so much evil in their life, they can't be forgiven. That basically means they can't go to heaven or into the afterlife. So they're basically bound for hell. For right now, they're stuck on earth. And I usually base damn souls of they get their power from demonic forces because they're already hell damned anyway. And they have the same ability as demons. They can make things levitate. They can throw things, hurt you. They can tell you stuff out of your personal life. They're not coming up with it themselves. They're getting it from a demonic entity. And again, it's just a very, very evil person. Now, just regular ghosts that are mad and angry, that's a totally different thing. You can reason with them. Damn souls, you really can't.
Can't kill a damn soul? I mean, how does that happen?
Well, I view a damn soul, they're already bound to go to hell anyway. So their punishment is basically already sealed. I don't know if you ever heard of stories of people being possessed by Judas Iscariot. There's very rare cases of demonic cases where like Judas Iscariot will possess somebody. I've never been on that type of case. I've just done research on it. But Judas Iscariot would be basically considered a damn soul, Lilith. Sometimes she's considered a demon. Sometimes she's considered a damn soul. I think it's all based on perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But most damn souls I've ran into, they've been just so evil in life. Like I said, they're either murderers or done something evil in life where they just can't cross over to heaven. They're just hellbound, but for some reason, we don't know why, they're just stuck here on Earth.
You said you used a halo. I mean, what other types of equipment did you use?
Let's see. We used SB7 Spirit Box, or Obelisk 3. I like using the old school equipment. So like the Obelisk 3, it's pretty old now, but
right.
It gets great results. Basic K2 meters, ghost meters. We used a Periscope 360, some REM pods. We have a REM pod that was actually given to us by the Rave Chasers, and which was also built by the same individual that built the Periscope 360, Jeremy Jones. He's actually the owner of the Jefferson Hotel, and that is a crazy haunt, too. I recommend people visiting his hotel and checking out that haunt. That's a pretty good haunt, too.
Is that in Oklahoma?
Texas, actually. Jefferson, Texas.
You can get some money tied up into the paranormal equipment. I know that. So, yeah, getting back to the cemetery, do you do very many of those?
We investigate cemeteries every now and then. I was thinking about when you were talking about running into anything evil in a cemetery. I only had one really bad experience. I really wouldn't call it bad. It was just odd for me. It was right when PIO first started up, and I think there was only like 3 members at the time. And this was probably back in November of 2006. Like I said, it was back when the team really first started going. We investigated this little bitty cemetery called Fairview Cemetery. And it's literally out in the middle of nowhere. There's just fields and stuff around. We go in, we start investigating the cemetery, and it's not a huge cemetery. And while we're in there, you know, we're getting like, it felt like whispers, like somebody approaching us, trying to whisper in our ear. And we got a couple of EVPs out of there of just like an older man trying to communicate with us. But during the investigation, we just felt this sense of evil. It wasn't like with us in the cemetery, but it felt like it was outside the cemetery. We noticed that the cemetery sat on at the time, I think it was a dirt road. So on the opposite side of the dirt road from the cemetery, we noticed these, what it looked like glowing eyes. And we thought, well, that's weird. And we thought maybe it's an animal. So we started walking. As crazy as we were, we started walking towards it to try to figure out what it was. And the closer we got, the eye color started changing. At first, it was like, it looked like the eyes were white. And they started, the closer we got, they went to yellow to almost orange. And then when we were right up on the edge of the cemetery, right at the fence, the eyes were red. And we're like kind of looking at each other like, that's weird. What could that be? And we could just sense this evil like on the outside of the cemetery. And of course, I'm trying to debunk, like, it's got to be an animal. We're literally out in the middle of nowhere. It's got to be an animal. And we're thinking like it's in the brush. So we get our flashlights and crazy as us, we shine right at the eyes. The eyes disappear and we're not seeing nothing. But the moment we take the flashlight away, the eyes are there. Of course, we did not want to walk out there in the middle of the dark to try to figure out what it was. We decided to go back the next morning to see if, make sure there wasn't anything reflective or anything like that. So we went back out the next morning during daylight. There really wasn't any bushes out there. It was an open field. When we shined our light on it, there was nothing out there, just these 2 floating eyes. And I just remember how evil that was. Now, we never got any EVPs from whatever this thing was. But for the 3 of us, for just starting off a ghost hunter team and not really knowing what we're doing, it woke us up of there's more things out here besides ghosts. You know, we don't know if it was demonic or what it was, but that'll always stick in the back of my mind of the glowing eyes that change color. I mean, I kept thinking like, it's got to be an animal, but animals' eyes don't change colors like that. You know, if it's a wolf or something, their eyes are going to be like a dog. They may be reflective, but they don't change colors like that. And just the idea of shining a bright flashlight in that same direction, the eyes disappear. There's nothing but empty space. Pull the light away. The eyes are back. And then going back out there during the day and realizing there's nothing reflective and it's nothing but an open field that was freshly cut. So it wasn't like weeds or anything. It gave us a wake-up call. It definitely gave us a wake-up call that we need to be careful.
At the Cowtown Museum?
We went to Wichita, Kansas with the Rafe Chasers. They do that TV show, Haunted Towns. They had an event out there. So we went out there to investigate with them. And we went out there with our sister team out of Texas. which is Rip Paranormal. And we went out there and investigated the town with the guys.
Now, basically what that museum is, too, is they've got, I think, like 70 different buildings, which half of those are like original buildings that they had taken from just various parts of Wichita. We're talking like 1800s, like cowboy days. Some of the buildings they had to like rebuild. But basically walking into this place, once you come in through the main gate or through the main building, it's like just stepping back in time, back into the 1800s. You're in the wild, wild west in Kansas.
I love those buildings.
Right. And it's, they've got replicas of like saloons, hotels, houses, train stations, everything you can possibly think of, any kind of building that would have been, you know, blacksmith shops. They've got replica buildings like that. And that's a very, very active place. We've actually been out there a couple of times now as well to investigate, and it's never disappointed.
Any certain type of equipment you like to use more than another, you know, during your investigations?
Personally, I like to use the spirit box, and then I like to use the periscope, and then the REM pods. Those are, and then the ovulus. Those are my probably favorite pieces of equipment to use during investigation.
Yeah, I used to like the spirit box and EVPs and the REM pods. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was, of course, they've come a long way since I've been doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, and kind of high tech now, you know, with the graphics and the 3D.
Yeah, we use the Potracom a lot this year, too. It's another device made by Jeremy Jones. And it works similar to a spirit box, but the communication coming out of that, you can hear your name being called on it. It's an amazing device. We got a lot of hits.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of hits from Cowtown off their Potracom.
What do you have? Anything coming up?
I think we were actually trying to plan a Bigfoot hunt, but that kind of fell through. We were trying to hook up with Calvin White. He runs just paranormal stuff. I think that's what his team's called. Mm-hmm. And he's Native American. And he the location he's at was like one of the biggest like paranormal sites. It's actually on Native American reservation for the Cheyenne and the Arapaho. But he does all the investigations out there. But besides ghost hunting, he does Bigfoot stuff too. And we were trying to do a Bigfoot hunt. We've never done that before. We're trying to like step out of the box just a little bit besides ghosts to see what the Bigfoot stuff is. And I think a lot of paranormal teams are kind of doing that now, just trying to step out of the box a little bit. And unfortunately that fell through. We couldn't get approval through the tribe to go out there. And the ghost hunting out there is kind of fizzled down too. A lot of the old buildings that were out there that we used to investigate, they're all tore down. The tribe's trying to expand more for the people, and they're trying to build schools and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the old stuff from the past is unfortunately disappearing.
The western part of the United States polluted with Native American haunts and burial grounds and activity.
Yes, if we can get that squeezed in. Now, November, December, our team kind of winds down a little bit, and a lot is because of some of us do retail work, and of course it's the holidays, and we'll take an emergency case during November and December, but we usually wind down because most of us are working a lot, and I don't want to interfere with my team members' family lives. So, you know, the holidays you want to spend with.
So what's in the future?
So in the future, in 2022, we'll probably try to pick up, depending on the weather here, you know, snow, ice, whatnot. We'll probably try to pick back up maybe late January or into February, just depending on the weather. But we are actually going to be going back to Cowtown, I believe, in February or March. We will most likely be booking Broken Bow Asylum. We're going to hit that one more time. We are going to kind of be stepping out of state probably maybe quite a bit in 2022. We've got some stuff on the books that I'm going to try to get us into. There's a jail in Missouri. The 1859 jail that's been on my kind of my radar for a long time. I'd really like to get us into possibly this would be a big one for me because it's on my radar, but it's a big one for me. Gippsland, Louisiana, where Bonnie and Clyde met their fate.
Mm-hmm.
That I'd like to get us down there as well.
And we recently, I had someone contact me actually through TikTok. It's a team out of Nevada. She's wanting to investigate with us. So we're slowly starting to step out of the box a little bit.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I was going to say last time I had you on the show, I don't think you mentioned too much about Bigfoot. So yeah, that's something new for you.
Yeah. And for me, I'm always interested in the paranormal. I don't care if it's Bigfoot, aliens, the Loch Ness Monster or whatever. I'm very open-minded, you know, and I just want to kind of share experiences with people. We mainly do ghost stuff, but like the Bigfoot stuff is, you know, we don't really know much about it. I've done research on Bigfoot. I guess the Bigfoot phenomena is not as big as ghosts. Like most people, they're more into ghosts, which is interesting why they wouldn't be into Bigfoot, because Bigfoot is something, could be a possible living creature, you know?
Right. That's what I love about this podcast. I'm not just with ghosts or spirits. You know, I can go outside the box of UFOs or fae, or mine is anything paranormal. And I'm going to ask you the same question was asked me a couple of years ago, is do you think Bigfoot and aliens are connected?
It's a possibility. I mean, you really don't know.
But I've been hit with, there's been a ton of sightings of UFOs lately. It's picking up a lot. And where these sightings are over lakes, that there are spottings of Bigfoot. So I didn't know how to answer that when the guest asked me that. And, you know, when you're thinking about it, you know, like paranormal is very, it's something you just can't explain, you know?
Yeah. We recently found out from the Rave Chasers, they've been kind of promoting how they're kind of stepping out of the box too. They're actually, I'm not trying to promote what they're doing, but I know they investigated with somebody about with aliens and see if there's a tie with ghosts with aliens. So I think a lot of paranormal teams are kind of stepping out of the box a little bit. Again, with aliens, it's unexplainable. Bigfoot's unexplainable. Ghosts, demons, all that, it's unexplainable, but you never know. Is there a tie? Is there a tie to all of this? Is aliens nothing more than demonic beings? Is Bigfoot, is he a spiritual creature, or is he actually alive? I mean, we really don't know.
Right.
And you won't know until you investigate and explore and try to discover. Of course, there's a lot of people that don't believe in ghosts and Bigfoot and stuff. And hey, that's fine. But there's nothing wrong with that.
You know, and look how vast our universe is. You know, we're just a speck. You know, you're stepping outside the box. That's cool. You know, into maybe something that's going to educate yourself, you know, on Bigfoot.
A lot of people that are skeptics, they tell me they don't believe in ghosts, and how can you prove ghosts are real? And I usually tell people flat out, there's no physical proof that I can prove to you that ghosts exist. I can prove to you electronic voice phenomena exist, but I can't prove to you it's ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot that's talking. And I usually tell people, when it comes with ghosts, you have to have an experience. You have to be there.
Yeah.
And witness and experience the activity. So like us going into Broken Bow Asylum, I had the experience of an entity grabbing my arm, squeezing me. And that is such a weird and unique feeling, knowing you're standing there and some invisible person has their arm around you and you can physically feel it on your skin. You know, most people, it's like they have to get that experience, you know, walking in
right
location and hearing a disembodied voice, knowing that you're the only ones there, where'd the voice come from, you know?
Yeah. And unless you experience it yourself, you'll probably be a non-believer, you know? So each their own.
I've been at paranormal conferences before. Well, people will try to call you out on how not real ghosts are. Me and Daniel had our own little table set up. We were selling like t-shirts and stuff for the team, trying to raise money for the team. And I had some holy water and stuff sitting out. And we literally had someone walk up, grab a bottle of holy water and say, this is stupid. And they completely walked off. And I'm kind of looking over at Daniel like, why are you at a paranormal conference if you don't believe in this stuff? You know, and it's no telling. You know, I just found it kind of odd.
One of my favorite quotes too, to quote him, Ed Warren, I think at one time said, nobody believes in ghosts, but everybody's afraid of them. And that kind of goes to show, it's just like, mention the word ghost or start talking about that, everyone kind of gets, you know, spooked. That's not real. That stuff's not real.
Well, guys, I appreciate you guys being on the show. I look forward to talking to you again.
Oh, yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. It was an honor.
I want to thank Kale Eberson and Daniel Fogel. It's always an exciting time when they're on the show. I will have their links at the bottom of this episode. And please check out Paranormal Investigations of Oklahoma. I'm your host, Al Cooley, Ghosts in the Valley podcast.